Nicolás Maduro were wrong and that only Venezuelans have the right to decide their own destiny. The future of Venezuela is a matter for Venezuelans. UK's Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt's call for more sanctions on Venezuela is wrong, Corbyn said in a tweet he posted over the weekend, his first reaction to the political situation in the South American nation. We oppose outside interference in Venezuela, whether from the U.S. or anywhere else. There needs to be dialogue and a negotiated settlement to overcome the crisis. Over the years, Corbyn has positioned himself as an advocate of non-intervention approach to foreign policy and is known to be an anti-war activist since his early years in politics and social movements. The United States was quick to recognize Guaido as interim president, and Washington's right-wing allies in the region followed suit in what the legitimate Venezuelan government of Nicolas Maduro calls a parliamentary coup.
Both Bolivia and Mexico will be present at the international conference being held on Thursday in Montevideo, Uruguay. Members of the European Union and various Latin American representatives will attend the meeting with world leaders in an effort to educate on the state of Venezuela and encourage a peaceful resolution without international interference. Confirming Mexico's Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard's attendance, the Mexican Foreign Ministry stated, quote, Mexico welcomes the dialogue initiative endorsed by the International Contact Group, the ICG, which will take place on February the 7th in Montevideo, Uruguay, to promote dialogue towards a peaceful and democratic resolution of the situation in Venezuela. The meeting takes place amidst the threats and aggression of the United States and its Western allies against the Venezuelan government and people.
I don't need you.
You burn me up.
I don't love you.
You plug me in.
Leave me alone.
You switch me up.
I'm self-contained.
You let me up.
Just go away.
And hello, if you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
I'm cold.
You shiver.
I'm shallow.
You drive me wild. You drive me wild.
You fill me with inertia.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Cathedral is something like few people have witnessed. It was burning at a level that you rarely see a fire burn. It's one of the great treasures of the world, I would say, might be greater than almost any museum in the world, and it's burning very badly. So that is beyond countries, that's beyond anything. That's a part of our growing up, it's a part of our culture, it's a part of our lives. That's a truly great cathedral. And I've been there and I've seen it, and there's no cathedral. I think I could say there's probably no cathedral in the world like it. It's a terrible scene.
And he'd also said that flying water tankers perhaps could have been used to put it out.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know? Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Say, little brother. You heard of this Sun Ra?
Yeah, dude's got a tight rap. Laying down a rap you never heard. I mean, that you can't even relate to.
He hasn't yet betrayed his black brethren to the exploitative, racially and culturally co-opted Caucasian power structure.
Right on, Bubbles, you got it. He's not dealing in black magic soul power. You understand?
Did, and the Republicans seem like they hijacked this hearing, because what is the media doing? The media is focusing on Candace Owens and some of her outrageous statements, and we're not talking about the real intellectuals that were there, the real freedom fighters that were there, who really could give you statistics, chapter and verse, on the rise of hate crimes, including white nationalism, white supremacy, who are the leading killers of police officers in this country over the last 10 to 25 years. In regard to Candace, I mean, she gets a lot of press because of what she says. But her press is rooted in her own ignorance, if you will. Candace Owens isn't being discriminated against. This is the ignorance part that you talked about, my colleague. Candace Owens isn't being discriminated against because she's a black woman who chooses to be a Republican. Everyone is free to choose their political party. She's not even being discriminated against. She's being criticized and called names and attacked because what she says is offensive and fundamentally incorrect. It's not a mistake. It's a purposeful error on her part. And so they twist the words to say that attacks on police officers are down or that the Southern strategy was not accurate. There's empirical data, documentary evidence to support this. And the piece that you just ran confirms that. But it also shows how it doesn't really matter to the Republicans what's right or wrong, what's truth or false. It's to get that message out, to talk to the core Republicans who believe in the nonsense and many are as ignorant as those who put life to those words, like Candace.
Kelly, you work in communications, so I'm curious about your thought about this. If we're having a hearing on white nationalism and the violence around that, that's going to point back to President Trump. If Candace Owens gets out here and steals the headlines by being incompetently wrong in public, that now gets us not talking about this. Is there a chance this was deliberate?
Of course it was deliberate. Candace Owens has, for lack of a better phrase, been used as a token for the entirety of her time in the spotlight. You know, every time something happens with the Trump administration, Fox brings on Candace. Every time Trump says something absolutely absurd via tweet or news conference, what have you, they bring on Candace to bring on maybe like the black perspective of things that I don't know about other black people, but the black people that I know don't share that same perspective. So it's definitely a smoke and mirrors thing with her. I don't understand why she still, you know, allows herself to be used in this manner, because it's really obvious. But it's definitely a communication strategy, no doubt.
But it's really rooted, again, in ignorance. So, for example, when Candace Owens says that, why aren't we here talking about Antifa, for example? Or NEFA is a far left political party that wants balance and wants a more liberal view of the world at all costs, right? violence, whether it's white nationalism or NEFA, violence is wrong. But look at what their goal is. ANIFA's goal isn't a race war, isn't a black majority or a coalition of minority majority here. Their view is that we should be a much more liberal society. I'm not defending them. Then when you look at when they go against white nationalists, if you will, or the Nazi Party, who want a race war, who believe that America ought to stay the majority white, that the immigration piece is really rooted in their racism, because the rhetoric you hear from the Nazis and the Nationalist Party and the Ku Klux Klan is the very very rhetoric you hear from me from the White House, then you understand that nationalism and Nazism is rooted in race. ANIFA is rooted in policy and how they view America.
Kelly, I'm going to give you one more chance to get in, then I want to hear from Joanna real quick, please.
Of course. Brief correction, it's Antifa.
Antifa. They spelled the wrong
Antifa.
Antifa.
The internet radio for smarter than original.
C'est intelligent de radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the people of the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com. as well as our main news portal, ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And along with my co-executive producer and master studio engineer, Ms. Guadalupe Morales, we welcome you back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, the official broadcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, coming straight at you from Everyman Studios in unceded Chinook and Peoples Territories, North America. I want to give a shout out to Radio Free Kansas, because they've been hanging on, and it's been kind of tough to get in here to the studio because what's happening out here in the world is completely fucked up. And I mean, how are you coping with this, brother and sister? Candace Owens goes up before a government panel and makes a complete and total mockery of what the fuck it is that Africans actually put up with in this country. And while that is happening, as a response to that, I suppose, right? Because this is what somebody said to me, as a response to this, to this massive amount of self-hate and political, this mania that's happening right now, this hyper-normalization that's fucking going on, because that's exactly what it is. While Candace Owens is selling out black people to the government, along with Mark Klein, I've said this not too long ago. I've said it a few times on a few past dispatches. I never really identified with being Jewish so much. I never really talked about it that much, and in my personal life on the show. But, over the past few years, I've had, I don't want to be taken out of context, which is one of the reasons why I don't do it. Because remember when Katie Lang found out she was Jewish and that this became her entire world? Right. Because she didn't know. And then she found out she was native. She said she didn't know. And then for a few years in the gay and lesbian press and the music press, that was all that she was about. That's what she was identified with. Right. Roseanne Barr, who makes Hitler cookies. See, we're going to get into some contradictions here. Right. As we always do, Roseanne Barr makes a big deal about identifying as Jewish. She's a 100% Israel supporter, no matter how much genocide they do towards Palestinians. And she makes Hitler cookies. Don't believe me, there's photographs all over the goddamn place. And you know, she came out as Jewish before that. And yeah, you know, it was her entire world, and it was all that everybody talked about. And, you know, Israel media, just like with K.D. Lang, you know, they went all over the place. The same thing they do with Drake. The same thing they do with Drake. You know, Drake is, he's half Jewish, right? And so was Colin Kaepernick, right? Is he? Somebody said to me that he was, and I don't know if they were just saying that because, you know, I mean, that's the other reason, one of the other reasons why I've been talking about this recently, you know, the amount of black folks who are slamming Bernie Sanders as the old Jew. I mean, this happened the last election cycle. But it's like double that now, to the point where I'm surprised of the people who are saying this. These are supposed to be educated, civilized black men and women who are saying that Bernie Sanders can't be trusted because he's a Jew. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, well, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, I'm going to support her instead of Bernie Sanders. Kamala Harris is supporting Israel no matter what the fuck they do to Palestinians. Yeah, she's black, but is she really the sort of black woman that you want up there? I mean, a lot of people are trying to play it safe with Tulsi Gabbard. I mean, look at her. Is that who you really want? How about Bobby Jindal? How about Nikki Haley? Are these the people that you want? How about Rod Singh? Are these the people that you want in the Desi community? Are these the people that you want? No. And see, in the Desi community, you know, again, you got a split, right? Remember I was talking about Mark Klein? Mark Klein has identified the split between American Jews with his bullshit. He is a Zionist, an American Zionist, who has used basically his Jewishness to front for the Trump administration. He actually defended the Trump administration, or Trump personally, saying that there were fine people on both sides when he was defending neo-Nazis at Charlottesville, right? One of which had killed Heber Heyer.
The New Zealand mosque murderer was actually a left-wing, self-described eco-fascist who also published a manifesto praising communist China as the, quote, nation with the closest political and social values to my own. Most of us correctly treat neo-Nazis and white supremacists as horrifying. History reminds us that we cannot write neo-Nazism off as a marginal phenomenon. There's a plethora of sickening neo-Nazi white supremacist internet sites fomenting hatred and violence primarily against Jews and blacks, but also against LGBTQ, women, feminists, and Muslims. We need to determine who is funding and is behind this. The FBI reports that Jews are the victims of 60% of the religious-motivated hate crimes in America. Jew hatred is the canary in the coal mine. It's unfortunately incumbent upon us to speak about the major issue threatening violence against Jews and all Americans, which is Muslim anti-Semitism, which is strengthened by significant institutional support and the support of imams and is becoming mainstream. Let's look at college campuses. During the decades that ZOA has been combating campus anti-Semitism, we've never received a single complaint about anti-Semitic discrimination, harassment, or intimidation perpetrated by neo-Nazis or white supremacists. By contrast, we receive hundreds of calls from students about anti-Semitic harassment, discrimination, and intimidation perpetrated by the left-wing, significantly Muslim hate group, Students for Justice in Palestine, SJP, and its allies. ZOA's letter to city...
Did he mention James Fields by name, Junior by name? Well, of course he didn't. And he wouldn't. Well, actually, he might, because he is that stupid. I mean, he is stupid enough. Well, he's been going around playing on stupidity. I mean, just like Hitler. Yeah, and I'm going to mention Hitler. I'm going to go there. You know, I mean, even the cat that came up, I mean, Mike Godwin, Godwin's Law, has said it's okay to call these people Nazis, to identify them as Nazis, to align them, to compare them to Nazis, because that's what they are. That's what they are. And instead of black people organizing around this and trying to educate themselves as to what's really happening, the Staples Center in LA, this major entertainment venue, was filled to capacity, standing room only, for the funeral. As far as I understand, and I checked with people from LA, where the Crips and Bloods actually goddamn started. And let's be serious about this, too. Now, before I go any fucking further, because I already know that the animosity is going to come across the goddamn internet about this. But I really don't give a fuck because, you know, I'm crippled. I'm old now. You know, I have a lot of injuries. You know, there's all kinds of bullshit, legal and so on, that I've had to deal with because I've been an activist, an active on the street activist fighting white fucking supremacy in my personal life. On the goddamn streets, in the motherfucking courtroom. You know, I've done this. I've paid my motherfucking dues. And I can sit back here and say, after this past week, politics in the black community, as far as black Americans concerned, are lost. There was more focus on this Nipsey Hussle thing. Look, this is not a personal fucking comment. You know, I mean, really, I know somebody's going to take it that way because people are juvenile and they got nothing else to fucking do. People like beef, which is one of the reasons why we can't have a goddamn conversation, because people are acting like goddamn children. I've been saying this for weeks, for months even. I mean, I've been saying it off and on during years, but you know, the attention span of the United States is like that of a fucking gnat. You only pay attention to what the fuck you want to pay attention to. You don't pay attention to anything that's fucking that matters. Until it affects you personally. Then you want the entire world to stop to deal with your particular fucking issue. The United States is full of a bunch of self-centered motherfuckers, regardless of nationality, or of original nationality, I should say, regardless of ethnic motherfucking origin, regardless of religion, and really, in a lot of cases, regardless of motherfucking educational goddamn background. You know, the United States is just full of a bunch of self-centered fucking people. And, you know, we have a social and economic system that has engendered this, that had, you know, that is pushed anti-intellectualism to the fucking, you know, to the forefront, to where, and this is where I'm getting, you know, I mean, when white people are fucking being ignorant as hell, you know, it's bad because they control the fucking society. But when I have to be ensconced within a motherfucking social group that gets more fucking, you know, emotional and more, you know, got something to say, and they're willing to turn the world upside down because this rapper died after being shot in an act of fucking gang violence. Don't tell me this shit isn't fucking gang related. Because for that motherfucker, when he gets in the pen, this shit's going to be completely gang fucking related. The Rolling 60s are a fucking gang. I mean, I checked with people from L.A. The Rolling 60s are a subset of the motherfucking Crips, right? Am I understanding that correct, Luke? The Rolling 60s are a subset of the fucking Crips, which started out as an offshoot of the fucking Black Panther Party for self-fucking defense. They were supposed to carry it on, right? That we've talked about this on this broadcast before. They saw the militant motherfucking, you know, waving the guns and shit, fuck Whitey rhetoric that Russell Marone shoots, who a lot of you have completely goddamn forgot about, which is another reason why I'm so sick of you motherfucking Hotep motherfuckers, because, you know, after Corinne Gaines got killed by the fucking police and her son got shot, and the motherfucking Hotep cat that was her common-law husband that was living with her talking all that macho black power shit grabbed his baby and ran out the motherfucking back door and left that woman to face the motherfucking SWAT team on her goddamn own. So, no. The Hoteps can kiss my motherfucking ass. This gang bullshit can kiss my motherfucking ass. I can't believe that Barack Obama signed off on this shit. Snoop, who I have no, you know, I mean, we play a PSA from him here, an anti-gun PSA. Well, we're going to trash that shit because it makes no sense to play an anti-gun PSA from Snoop Dogg, who I thought he was a Rastafarian now. I thought he got spiritual. Whatever happened to all of that shit? Right? He's right back to defending Crips and fucking Bloods. Talking about Crips and Bloods fucking forever. Which is, I mean, I went and I looked this shit up before I even, because I'm going to admit to you. Because people are going to call me on this shit, and you're right. I didn't know who the fuck he was before this. And people are telling me that he changed the world. I'm like, what the fuck are y'all talking about? Because he was a gangbanger and said, oh, stop shooting each other? There's a whole bunch of motherfuckers that said that shit. A lot of them are sitting in the motherfucking pen right now. Remember Tookie Williams? The man that started a lot of this shit, right? He started it and then tried to stop it, and then they had to protect him from the motherfuckers that were following his goddamn example.
Barbara took it twice. We had prayer on both occasions. It met me at first with so much joy and so much hope, saying, I feel good. I have no fear. I have been here before through valleys and shadows of death, with bullets passing and whizzing past my head. And yet I feel good as a social transformer, as a redeemer. His impact upon people around the world has given him a new lease, a new life, a new joy, a new hope. And to that extent, he wants those who love him and who found joy in his works to live out that legacy and to be anti-violent and anti-gang and anti-drug and to choose hope. And that is his lasting message. And we had prayer, and I told him I would see you in the morning, and we laughed and we embraced. He said, I don't laugh very much, but now when children write me, when they read my book, it makes me laugh, it makes me happy. That's my highest joy, he said. The Leffen came out here, and then we found out that the word had come over the wire service, and went back in and shared the information with Barbara and with Tookie that the governor had ruled the clemency would be denied. I was disappointed in that decision. When, like Pontius Pilate, he had life and death in his hand, and by washing his hand, in effect, chose death.
You know, the idea of corporatizing the rolling 60s and putting them on the Forbes fucking 500 is bullshit. And if you want to make this out, then I'm making a personal fucking comment against Nipsey Hussle. You're a motherfucking liar. Play the whole goddamn fucking thing, okay? You're a fucking liar. You're a fucking liar. I didn't know that cat from Adam, man. I'm going by what the fuck I'm seeing. Yeah, I understand that he had a business. A whole lot of black people got fucking businesses. I grew up with goddamn ex-gang members and shit. You know, I'm not talking about these gang bangers as the way you motherfucking talk. I'm talking about from cats from the fucking late 50s and 60s that cut people up in front of their goddamn families on the East Coast. I'm talking about motherfuckers that walk into a fucking funeral and shot the goddamn body in the casket in front of the motherfucking family. These are real goddamn stories, okay? Go and ask people about the fucking South Side of motherfucking Philly or Italian goddamn Philly when it comes to fucking gang activity. You gang motherfuckers all about guns, see, and about 50 on one and shit, or 20 motherfuckers shanking one motherfucking guy at a time. Hardly any of you know a goddamn thing about a fair fucking fight. You don't know shit about it. And gang life to you motherfuckers is not even actually trying to protect your motherfucking block from the predators on the other block. Which is how the gang shit started. You motherfuckers get into this shit and it's just violence for violence sake. You know, and then you can't make any money you can't keep a job doing fucking gangbang. So what are you doing? You're doing illegal motherfucking shit. And then you wonder why the police roll up on you. Then you wind up sorry. You know, I keep hearing on the Roland Martin show about, you know, the billions of dollars that are flowing through Black America. So what the fuck is Black America doing about this? Well, Black America is signing off on the fucking gang feud, because that's what it looked like to me. I watched it. Because people are like, man, you didn't know anything, man. You need to sit down and really see this. Look at the emotion. And that's all I kept hearing about was the emotion about it and the aesthetic about it. I saw a motherfucking gangland funeral. That's what the fuck I saw. I saw fucking people flashing colors and gang signs. That's what the fuck I saw. And then, you know, I'm watching Barack Obama send a letter endorsing this shit. Snoop Dogg comes up and fucking completely puts his mark on it, talking about, you know, Crips and Bloods forever and shit, blue and red forever, when we're talking about a civil war over what, 3 goddamn decades? That has killed how many goddamn black people, and how many black men and women are going to get killed or locked up today for life because of what the fuck these gangs are about? This is what you want to perpetuate? You want to put an endorsement on this shit? Look at Africa. Nipsey Hussle said he went to Africa. Because he was an African. His father was from East Africa, right? So here it is. He goes over there and obviously does not understand the fucking political situation, does not understand the history. And we got audio of him here on the Larry King show, when Larry King made a fucking, you know, I mean, it's the most salient goddamn question he could ask somebody. A black man in the 21st century. I'm Jewish. I don't call myself a kike. Why, as a black person, do you call yourself a nigger? And he goes, well, we're not saying nigger, we're saying nigga. Give me a fucking break, people.
I think when it's obvious. I mean, I know it when I hear it.
Okay. Right? I know it when I hear it, too. But what about when the Washington Redskins are playing? And all of a sudden, the racial slur comes out at that point. Isn't it kind of big, the question, why we'll be playing as the Redskins?
You use it in your lyrics, don't you?
Absolutely.
Why is it okay there?
I think black people in America, it's a unique culture. It's not, you know, it's a unique situation. That word is a part of the black culture in America. Like, you got black people in Africa. My dad is from a country in Africa called Eritrea. And that word is not as prevalent in the culture of that country. That's the word that kind of exists in black culture in America, especially like the hip hop culture, especially the culture a lot of these NFL players identify with.
Jews don't call each other.
Right.
Italians don't call each other.
And black people don't call each other.
But they do, don't they?
They say nigga.
Oh, they use it instead of R.
E-R, and that's where the difference in terms of me being offended. You know, I've never seen one of my homeboys or somebody I'm cool with and be like, what's up, my nigga? Not at all. I think it goes with what you said about, you know, the generation we grew up in. It wasn't as offensive. I wasn't privy to, you know, segregation other than in documentaries and then, you know, talking to my grandparents. I think more than anything, like what, you know, the guys are saying, it's institutional now. It's not really overt. You learn about it when you go to jail or when you go in the courtroom or when you make it to the county jail and you see, you know, the amount of blacks and the amount of Hispanics as opposed to the amount of whites. You see racism there.
Give me a fucking break, folks. You have simply turned around and internalized this bullshit. This whole acceptance of the ghetto is internalizing what the fuck white people have laid out for you. This shit of accepting gang culture as a legitimate motherfucking alternative is nothing but accepting what the fuck white people have made out of you. Look at South America. You see all these goddamn people here trying to fucking get over here? Are you paying attention, ladies and gentlemen? These fucking people that Trump is trying to build a wall to keep out, because they're not putting up a wall between the United States and Canada. They're putting up a wall between the United States and fucking the rest of Spanish-speaking Latin America. They're trying to keep all these motherfucking Indians out from Central America who are running from what the fuck the U.S. did there. I mean, I, for one, think it's personally, I find it ridiculous that people on the left do not remember. Or choose not to remember, because if you talk about this, somebody has said this to me, a white woman said this to me, you're demonizing these people who choose to join gangs. I'm like, well, what the fuck? It's not a matter of demonizing them, it's pointing out what is. You see, when they were doing a lot of these roundups before, and, you know, again, the left doesn't want to accept either that Obama kicked out damn near 4 million people, which was double what George W. Bush had rejected in terms of Spanish-speaking immigrants, right? Obama kicked out more. His policies were harsher. The tent cities, these concentration camps, because that's really what they are, were envisioned by the Obama administration. You know, and of course, you know, Donald Trump is full of shit because he takes credit for it when there's no heat for these camps. And then as these two children die and whatever the fuck, you know, and these families start being separated, he's still okay with it because that's the policy that he and Stephen Miller have laid out. You know, another Jew who is a neo-Nazi. And if you don't like what I just said, too bad. Don't listen to the broadcast anymore. He is a Jewish American who associates and pursues politically neo-Nazi policies. If you don't like that, don't listen to the broadcast anymore. Because I'm not interested in anything that you have to say. You're part of the problem. you're part of the problem because you're not going to deal with a fact. That's like black women telling me, oh, it's impossible for Candace Owens to be a racist, a white supremacist because she's black. And it's like, are you really that stupid? Are you really that stupid? I mean, when Obama came in, he dumbed down everybody, everything. The entire left just went the fuck to sleep. You know, he was going to put on a pair of comfortable shoes and he was going to march with you. He never put on a comfortable pair of shoes to march with any goddamn buddy. But he certainly was able to sit down and have a beer with a racist goddamn cop and Skip Gates, who also is pretty useless when it comes to black America. Out of all the intellectuals we have, you know, why they keep putting the same people up there is beyond me. But then again, it isn't beyond me because I understand what the fuck is going on. They keep the narrative going. And see, and the narrative is, well, you can't condemn people that are in gangs, right? You know, you just condemn what they do as if it makes any sense. As if that makes any sense. You know, first off, how did these things come about? The California prison system was full of people who were picked up by the first Bush administration, by the Clinton administration as well, right? Some of these people, even that, some people say you can go as far back as Jimmy Carter, which would make sense because his policies in South America were lousy. They might have been good for North America, but they were terrible for people in South America. You know, and in a lot of cases, between him and Kissinger, that's kind of the beginning of the modern rot. We can go back to the 1800s under Roosevelt about this. But what I'm trying to say is here, understand me. The left does not seem to either remember this or doesn't want to, you know, look at it. But what is happening in South America is not just a matter of American policies in those countries, you know, banking, what have you, and the numerous coups that have happened. Numerous invasions. It's also a matter of the California prison system being full of gang activity after the 60s, right? Because, you know, things on the street got politicized. So blacks in the prison system got politicized. As a response, the whites got politicized. But it only lasted for a minute. Now, we're not talking about, like, the case at the prison Attica in New York State, where you had a Native American John split in the sky. Somebody we were actually, you know, tight with here at Intelligent Aboriginal Radio and throughout the Aboriginal Press News Service. You know, he was one of our sources up in Canada where he went to. But, you know, you got to understand something. And he said it himself, that if something happens to me, it's not going to be, they're going to make it look like an accident. Supposedly he hit his head and died. It's possible. John splitting the sky. Look it up. He started the Attica Revolt back in the 70s. And he got the black and Latino or Spanish-speaking Indians there and the white prisoners. He got all of the different ethnic groups to get their shit together. And the response from the governor at that time, Rockefeller, for those of you who are not old enough to remember, which is probably a lot of you, and some people just don't remember, you know, Rockefeller said, yeah, you know, fix the problem. And they went in and basically shot up the entire yard. They killed as many people as possible. They killed as many people as possible. And then they had blamed the deaths of some guards. There were some guards that were killed. They blamed the deaths on the prisoners. And we now understand after the fact, right, from surviving guards and from testimony of people who were there, that the guards were actually killed by the National Guard. The corrections officers were killed by the National Guard. So, when you're dealing with what's going on in prison, you're talking about a politicized situation that they don't want to let get political. So they allow the racial aspects of these gangs, whether they be white, whether they be Latino, whether they be black, they allow that to come forth. You understand what I'm saying? So when you're looking at what's happening in South America in terms of, you know, American policy, you got to understand that a part of this is, and none of this is monolithic. A part of this is when they put these people in the L.A. prison system before they came up with these immigration internment camps. They got immersed in gang culture because it was there and they kind of had no choice. Right. It was either that or not be able to go and have a piss in peace. You understand what I'm saying? Because when you're when you get into the fucking prison system, that shit is racial from the get-go. Now, if you might be one of the weaker motherfucking institutions, you might be able to have a little crossover. But for the most part, man, you got to pick a side. And and of course, every institution is different. And you know, when you got more drugs and shit, you're going to have more gang motherfucking activity. So when these young men and some women, but mostly young men, who were nobodies in Guatemala, who were nobodies in Nicaragua, wherever the fuck they come from, San Salvador, El Salvador, wherever the fuck, right? Panama and shit. They were nobodies, you know. They were able to survive in that environment, and that was about it. But their family brought them up here. So when everybody got taken in for violating the visa, for, you know, whatever the case may be, or for, you know, some infraction where they decide, okay, well, we're going to kick you out. I mean, my personal opinion is this. If you run a red light, that's not a reason to throw anybody out. You know, some nonviolent fucking crime is not a reason. But you got some shit that's violent, that's going against society. No, your ass needs to go back with the fuck, you know, sorry. You violated whatever motherfucking, you know, welcome that you had here. So when the left is like, nobody should be kicked out, it's like, you got motherfuckers over here who, for whatever reason, I mean, there's a whole lots of fucking reasons, really. And not being able to find work, not being able to learn language, culture shock, which is a big reason why a lot of motherfuckers join gangs. Culture shock is a lot of it, because they cannot separate themselves from their culture, even though they're in a completely different environment, which you shouldn't have to be able to do that. But I'm here to tell you, that's a stressful motherfucking situation. So you got some motherfuckers that join gangs out of that shit. A lot of it is survival. A lot of it, and I talk about this all the time, some of you motherfuckers just join gangs because you just want to be tough. Because this is, be honest, it's hard to get the attention that you want to get. It's hard to motherfucking do a lot of shit in some environments if you don't have 3 or 4 motherfucking months of jail time under your belt. If you don't have a couple of scars and shit, you know, if you haven't been punched out or whatever, you know, because of the environment out there, these women are like, these are real men. So instead of having a conversation about why motherfuckers want to be involved in this shit, no, we're not having any conversation. So going back to what I'm saying about South America is, when they emptied these LA prisons, because you got to remember, there was a flush. There were two of them. And I can't remember which administration it was, but there was a flush. And they sent these cats, and it happened under Obama. They sent these cats back to South America. So, Central America, really. And what do you think they did? They took Crips and Blood bullshit down there. So now you got gang signs all over motherfucking South America, man. This shit is not funny. And if you're going to condemn the United States for anything, condemn the United States where the United States is wrong. Condemn it where it needs to be condemned. Just don't fucking yell COINTELPRO and talk about, you know, the Illuminati and some other, you know, crap-ass bullshit that doesn't mean any motherfucking thing, because it's a waste of time. And all you're doing is confusing the fucking situation. You know, why am I saying this? You know, why am I saying it? Now, when it comes to the U.S. left here, Glenn Greenwald is a fucking hypocrite. He's been going back and forth about goddamn Assange. He's a fucking hypocrite. He's been running in and out of Russia, too, and nobody's motherfucking stopping. Yeah, I know his husband got grabbed for a little while in Brazil because they were trying to put some pressure on Greenwald. But the bottom line is, Greenwald doesn't have a motherfucking thing to say about Assange's links to neo-Nazis, about Assange's links to Ron and Rand Paul and their motherfucking connection to the far right, to the alt-right here in the United States. He has nothing to say about that. Black Agenda Report has now, you know, all of a sudden, you know, they've been against the FBI. Not just for COINTELPRO, just against the FBI in general, because they've been investigating Trump. They've been defending Putin all through this shit. They're still CPR Metro. They're still defending Putin through all this shit. They're validating the fucking Barr report. How the fuck does that make any sense? I mean, they try to validate it with some like, well, you know, they're still racist, this, that, and the other. Oh, what the fuck ever. That's the politics of Black America today. You know, Shaq O'Neal being a face for Pizza Hut. That's the politics of America today. Floss, entertainment, living large. Kim Kardashian is being forgiven for supporting Trump. Her and Kanye West have been supporting Trump. But they got this one black woman out to do a solid for Trump. And now she decides that she's going to take the bar exam. I don't know what state, where you could take a bar exam without actually having gone to law school. But this is what she plans to do. And black women are defending this when Kim Kardashian doesn't represent you at all. She doesn't do anything other than take 3 fucking selfies a day and sell her motherfucking image. That is her entire fucking reason for being in existence. And her fucking husband, with his total misunderstanding of what the fuck, you know, black skinheads and shit in the 60s were fucking about, his trying to take the Confederate flag and twist it so he could, you know, like do like Candace Owens and make the racism look better. Because remember, he's never faced racism. Just like we got audio from Lil Wayne, right? He's never faced racism. This stoned out motherfucker says he's never faced racism. Because apparently when you got tattoos on your fucking face and you look like him and you got gold all through your goddamn teeth and you can't even fucking make a coherent goddamn sentence about sounding like you're on drugs.
What's your reaction to Kaepernick's protests?
Going right back again to this man. It's a man and his decisions, man. Respect the man and his decision. That's all I can do. I have no opinion on it because the things that's, I mean, I'm not into it enough to even give an opinion. So when he did it, I really didn't even know what, somebody had to tell me why he was doing it. That's how much I didn't know what was going on. And I kind of still don't. So somebody had to explain to me, like, are you kneeling because of the Black Lives Matter thing and because of, and all that wave or whatever, that whole wave just went by me too fast for me even try to even give an opinion. So I just was like, oh, okay, this was happening.
So you're a deep thinker in these issues. Mm-hmm. So step back from all of it. I know this is a very broad question, but where are we in the United States of America in race relations and what you see from day to day in your life?
Skip, they wouldn't want to ask me that. They wouldn't want my answer to represent it because God knows I have been nothing but blessed. My whole path, these 33 years have been nothing but a blessing. I have never, and never is a strong word, never dealt with racism, and I'm glad I didn't have to. And I don't know if it's because of my blessings. I don't know if it's, but it is my reality. So I would have to say, not only did I thought it was over, I still believe it's over, but obviously it isn't.
So you've never experienced any offensive behavior from any other color? Or?
No, sir.
Wow. But you are blessed.
But you see what's going on, even in your city, New Orleans.
You know, no, this is representative of Black America, really? And older people, scholars, motherfuckers with education are telling me that I need to motherfucking, you know, understand what's happening today. I do understand what's happening today. You've internalized all of the negative shit that Black America has to motherfucking offer. How the fuck did we go from Dr. King, Malcolm X to this shit? Somebody talk to me. How do we go from crying at these goddamn funerals? There's a fucking documentary called Crips and Fucking Bloods. I watched it, where these goddamn gang members are sitting there looking at the fucking the family members of the people that they've murdered. And so for 5 minutes, everybody sits and feels bad and shit and say, oh man, look at him, man. You know, what he's suffering through, man. You know, he never thought about that. And it's like, yeah, but we're going to continue to push this. So you can still do the gang shit. You can still do the drug dealing. You can still do the sexualization of women in the motherfucking hood. Because that's another thing I'm tired of. The Me Too fucking movement. I'm done. I'm done. Because it's not about what the fuck is supposed to be about at all. You know? I'm hearing white women excuse catcalling in the hood, motherfuckers grabbing, you know, women's asses in the hood as well. You know, that's the Black community and it's different. You know, you can't really say anything. I mean, how many are you going to be straight up honest, my Black listeners? How many of you are going to be honest with your fucking selves and say that women who live in public motherfucking housing, women who live in Black neighborhoods where they got to pass 18 motherfuckers standing on the corner who don't have anything to fucking do, and we can't blame them, right? Which in a way we should not blame them, but at the same fucking time, that means that it's up to the fucking Black community to do something about it, right? instead of just putting up a basketball court, instead of building a motherfucking another studio so they can come in and sing and rap and all that kind of shit, make music, you know, how about putting up some shit where they can actually do something that actually builds the motherfucking nation? How about signing up people for agricultural fucking studies? For a free education in agricultural fucking studies. How about education studies? So that people can understand how to motherfucking educate correctly, properly, intelligently. So that you can educate your own motherfucking kids instead of fucking taking it out on Asians and shit because there's only 7 black kids in this high school, Stuyvesant, right, Luke? Stuyvesant High School in New York, where you got to take a test just like every fucking buddy else. The Asians ace the test. White people are a fucking minority. Only 7 Africans got in this goddamn time. But, you know, at what point do you say to yourself, we have to fucking do this? Instead of fucking telling them to fucking be a rapper, to be a goddamn athlete, you know, to be a fucking entertainment motherfucking celebrity, to be an internet personality. When do we tell our children it's time to fucking start building a nation with something other than rhetoric from the operating thetan, Louis Farrakhan? Because that's the other reason why I'm upset with this goddamn thing over here at the Staples Center for Hustle. Because what the fuck is Farrakhan doing for anybody? He ain't doing shit for nobody. How the fuck do you read? I'm saying this again. How the fuck do you read the message to the black man and you're motherfucking talking about gang shit? Oh, they got to get, you know how he is. You know, he's got to bring up some mathematical bullshit in it. You know, he's got to build the crowd up because this is what he is. Louis Farrakhan is a fucking magician. He's got the gift of gab, and he always has. But all you got to do is go on YouTube. I'm not putting any words in his mouth. He defended Kanye West, and he's been defending Trump ever since he's been in office. They have adopted Scientology, which was created by a motherfucking white supremacist. Look it the fuck up. Don't believe me. And he's a pal of Alex Jones's, right? He's been on Alex Jones's show how often? They don't say anything negative about each other. Not anymore. Alex Jones used to say shit negative about Farrakhan. Farrakhan forgave him. Just like Jim Brown has forgiven all the white people who have ever done damage, right? You know, he's a Trump supporter too. So, you know, so all of these motherfuckers on Pastor Mark Burns, Diamond and Silk, they're still running around. And, you know, you can't say anything about Diamond and Silk. You can't say anything about Candace Owens because them black women are like, well, you're coming down on them because they're black women. And what exactly is Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk and the other black Republicans, Omarosa? Omarosa's trying to, you know, to lay low on this shit. Mia Love, where are any of them? Michael Steele, remember? Michael Steele laughed like a motherfucker. We still got the audio, don't we? Michael, the Republican Steele. I'm being nice now because I used to call him the human fucking lawn jockey. But, you know, he's not the only one out there anymore. But he's the front for the GOP. He accused everybody black that accused the GOP of racism, of anti-white fucking racism and negativity. You know, and then they dropped his ass like a fucking, when they didn't need him any fucking money, dropped him like a bad goddamn habit. But he was laughing at that Barack the Magic Negro cut that came out from some Republican radio program not too long ago. So no, these are the Negroes that that have basically muddied the motherfucking waters. And then on the other end of the shit, like I said, you got your motherfucking Hoteps. You got your Farrakhan types that own the outfit themselves. You know, I mean, other than pontificating, what the fuck does Farrakhan actually do? Oh, he represents, he don't represent nothing but his motherfucking self. But see, if you go out there and you say that Farrakhan doesn't represent anything but the fucking Nation of Islam as a cult, because that's what it is, then you get, you know, black people who get nervous because they don't want to be seen as negative towards another black man. Well, show me a positive goddamn thing that the Nation of Islam has done. They got the fruit of Islam, right? But they haven't seemed to have been able to go after neo-Nazis. No, they've met with neo-Nazis. It's funny how the black community forgives the fact that Farrakhan has met with neo-Nazis twice throughout the 80s and fucking 90s. You know, publicly twice, but they've had other fucking meetings. And then, you know, Malcolm X, we've played the audio here. The information is fucking out there. All you have to do is talk to anybody that's got a number in the motherfucking Nation of Islam. Talk to an original member of the NOI. Some of you got family in this shit still, okay, that is still alive. Same thing with me, man. My family is UNIA, United Negro Improvement Association. So do you really expect me to motherfucking take a fucking gang funeral as a symbol of black solidarity? When y'all talk a big motherfucking game, the only, you know, all you talk about is bullshit. It's like, what was it? Can't even remember his name. The Black Gorilla Fam. No, it wasn't Black Gorilla Fam. You know, the black, whatever the fuck group it was, they rolled up on this cat in Texas, right? They rolled up on him. It was one of the Malcolm X Gun Club shit, right? So they rolled up on him. He had a weapon. And, you know, they brought some federal fucking charges on him and shit. And he was in the Fed for a while. And there was public motherfucking attention. And they ended up having to release him because they really didn't have anything against him. But let's be honest. Is he a black identity activist? I didn't say extremist. I said activist. The extremist bullshit is their motherfucking words, which they don't apply across the motherfucking board, right? But, you know, because you got this white boy, I said it like that. This white boy, because this motherfucker is a kid to me. And you know, he is the son of a goddamn sheriff's deputy. And he went and set fire to three goddamn black churches, left white supremacist symbols. And the news media is still saying that they don't understand why he did this. They don't understand what the motive could possibly be. We need to understand this. We need to find out. We need to have some patience and look at this. Give me a goddamn break, man. Give me a goddamn break, people. You know, where are your motherfucking priorities here? Okay, you know, like I said, Tariq Nasheed can talk all his bullshit, but he fucking played a pimp jumping up and down on the Michael fucking Moore show. But this is what y'all want to give a pass to and advocate. Farrakhan goes and meets a goddamn white supremacist and shit, hooks up with Scientology, but y'all don't have a problem with that. And you let him at this fucking funeral where they're all advocating gang motherfucking solidarity. When gangs are selling dope, selling motherfucking women, trafficking in goddamn women, murdering fucking people, breaking up fucking families, giving the police all the motherfucking excuses that they goddamn need to come down on the entire motherfucking community. That, you know, they tried to get political for a fucking minute, and basically it was just so a handful of fucking people could make some money. And it's like, no, and you want a rational black man to endorse this? No, I can't. I can't. I'm ashamed that black people are even having this goddamn conversation. I mean, Al Sharpton was there. Again, America and black America, too, has a goddamn attention span, the length of a fucking gnat. Al fucking, you know, for people who talk so much in gang culture about no snitches, what the fuck is Al Sharpton? What is the Reverend Al Sharpton but a fucking snitch? He tried to set up Ashada Shakur. He tried to set up three other goddamn Black Panther members. He's also ratted on the goddamn mafia. But you let him in like, you know, it's nothing. Because he's got the gift of goddamn gab. He's got the gift of fucking gab. He's got the gift of fucking gab. And what black people are all about is showmanship. You know, Sun Ra knew it. Earth, Wind, and Fire understood this. You know, spectacle. That's all the black American and probably the African is about too. Because how long did fucking Mugabe go in Zimbabwe? Right? What happened throughout black fucking Africa? I mean, what the fuck happened throughout black Africa after supposed independence? Did they, you know, get rid of the colonial lines and shit, the colonial border lines for these countries that the Europeans have put in, the colonizers have put in? No, they kept them. They kept the military structure. They kept every fucking thing. And then what did they do? They started stomping on indigenous people. I mean, how many motherfuckers who call themselves indigenous? Because, and it all goes back to a line taken out of context. For Malcolm X. Malcolm X said you should use the term aboriginal because aboriginal means first. But he didn't actually go to Africa and speak to aboriginal people. He spoke to Arab heads of state in Africa. He spoke to leaders in Africa. Yes, he met common people, but he did not deal with indigenous people over there. If he had, he would have augmented his statement. Because, you know, what happened is because they don't really understand this. All they understand is aboriginal means first. So better than white people. And they jumped on that bullshit. How many of you actually understand what's happening to the Kong people over in Africa? Or what's happening in Mauritania right now? Or what's happening with what what's the Sudan, Mauritania? I mean, Mogadishu. I mean, how much shit is happening to indigenous people in Africa right now? What's happening in Morocco? You know, so it's like, no. I mean, South Africa, what happened over there? You know, it's like, come on, man. You know, I mean, they got nigger stores in Africa. Come on. You know, it is easier for me. I swear, I've got into so many goddamn disagreements with black folks, young and old. And the young ones, they want to fight me. I mean, physically fucking challenge me. Because I'm saying, calling each yourselves niggas is sick. I don't give a fuck how the fuck you spell it. I didn't fight white fucking power all my goddamn life so that black people could call themselves fucking nigga. It's sick. And it's evidence of a fucking symptom of how much damage has been goddamn done. But you can't tell anybody this because, you know, now we're cheating these young black people out of an identity. They should be cheated out of an identity that fucking identifies as what the fuck you've been made by your goddamn colonizer. It should be motherfucking gotten rid of. It should have been gotten rid of a long goddamn time ago. But see, Geronimo Pratt spent the majority of his motherfucking life in prison for you while you're out here calling yourselves niggas. Albert Woodfox. All three of the men that were the Angola fucking three. Leonard Peltier is still in goddamn prison. Sticking up for Indian people. Why Indian people are telling me that, you know, well, you know, the gang problem, you know, it's the only way that these kids can identify with being Indian. That's the only way? Well, I guess that's the only way because the elders and shit, the ones who tried to actually stick up, well, people told them that they needed to fucking go away. So they just sat in the goddamn trail until they passed the fucking way and took all that fucking knowledge with them. And yeah, you know, there's a handful of people who are still, you know, able to keep things going. But you can't say that that's really keeping shit going. Maybe it's keeping things going where you are, maybe in your particular corner, maybe within your particular family. But stop saying that Native America is healthy. Native Americans are serving in the goddamn Marines, Air Force, motherfucking United States Navy, United States fucking Coast Guard, CIA, FBI. So what the fuck are you talking about? They're integrated into the fucking same goddamn political, economic, and cultural motherfucking structure that is oppressing their fucking people right this goddamn second. These are fucking contradictions. And Farrakhan is not going to fucking do anything for anybody. Al Sharpton isn't going to do shit for any goddamn buddy. And black women defending Karen Soans, it's like, you know, what the fuck is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? Well, black women get hassled. That's right. Black women get hassled. You really think she's going to defend black women? She's using black women being hassled. She's using the angry black woman as a cover. Diamond and Silk have been doing this shit since Trump has been in office. The year before Trump has been in office. When are you not going to understand it?
Dr. King was a real man.
You know he was a Republican.
Dr. King, a Republican?
Democrats passed those black codes and Jim Crow laws. Democrats started the Ku Klux Klan.
White hoods and sheets?
Democrats fought all civil rights legislation from the 1860s to the 1960s. Democrats released those vicious dogs and fire hoses on blacks.
Seriously?
And the Dixiecrats remained Democrats and vowed to vote for a yellow dog before a Republican. Republicans freed us from slavery and put our right to vote in the Constitution.
What?
Republicans started the NAACP, Affirmative Action, and the HBCU.
Sounds like Democrats have bamboozled blacks.
Democrats blocked the minimum wage passed by Republicans, and over $200 billion have been spent on education, health care, and job training since President Bush took office.
So Democrats want to keep us poor while voting only Democrats.
Democrats want us to accept same-sex marriages, teen abortions without a parent's consent, and suing the Boy Scouts for saying God in their pledge.
See, we need to think and vote on our own values.
Exactly. Democrats have talked the talk, but the Republicans have walked the walk.
Girl, it's time for us to
do the walk.
You know, these are the same people that would never allow themselves to be to be taken in by a crackhead who asked them for change on the street. Right? Because if I give somebody an apple who's homeless, you know, I'm just encouraging their motherfucking addiction. Right? I'm encouraging their homelessness. But, you know, these same motherfuckers will give a pass to somebody like Farrakhan, who takes on a white supremacist religion in addition to the fucking type of Islam they teach in the Nation of Islam. And then he's going to associate with Alex Jones and motherfucking the white Arab resistance leader. Look it the fuck up. Don't believe me. Tom Metzger and his son. Don't believe me. They support each other. Okay? The Nation of Islam doesn't have a problem with white supremacists. Okay? But, you know, if Nipsey Hussle's funeral was supposed to be about any goddamn thing other than gang shit, if it's really supposed to be about the upliftment of the black community, then what the fuck is the snitch like Reverend Al Sharpton doing there? And what is somebody who associates with goddamn white supremacists like Farrakhan doing there? What are they doing there? And why is Barack Obama endorsing gang shit? And no, I don't take Snoop Dogg seriously. Why the motherfuck should I? You know, like I said, we play or we have played in the past because we're not going to do it anymore because it's hypocritical. You're going to play an anti-gun goddamn thing but still push Crips and Bloods. You really going to tell me Crips and Bloods or what? There's nothing but a social group, right? Well, that's no different than goddamn J.T. Reddy saying that Adolf Hitler was nothing but a white civil rights activist. That's the same shit that Candace Owens is fucking pushing. And how many times has Farrakhan defended Hitler? Hitler was a great man. He did say that and then tried to, because I was one of the people making the motherfucking argument. I've admitted this on this goddamn show. I tried to fucking do exactly what Tamika Mallory is doing right now. I tried to fucking find a way to deal with Farrakhan and at the same time deal with the motherfucking racism. And what I realized is you can't do both. He's defended Hitler more than once. And he just recently called Jews termites, which inspired how much bullshit. You know, you got one black guy went and tagged up a goddamn synagogue somewhere. I think it was New York, and somebody else who attacked some Jewish people. And these are both black folks. I can't endorse that, and I'm not going to motherfucking endorse that. And if you consider that to be disunity, then I don't want you around me at all. I don't want a black man that's going to fucking sit around and do that type of bullshit, because that's no different than a white person putting up with saying that, you know, making excuses for the Klan, making excuses for David Duke, but saying, but I got a black friend, so it doesn't really mean anything. You know, I mean, these are the same people who are making excuses for Trump. Why should I take any of you seriously? Because it's really clear you don't understand politics. And it's very clear that a lot of you are so intellectually goddamn lazy, you don't want to understand politics because you actually might have to take responsibility for your own motherfucking situation. And you might actually have to give up some of this shit you've been hanging on to so fucking dearly. You know, basically wanting to live a lifestyle that is detrimental to the motherfucking community. You want to have your pimp lifestyle. You want to have your big pimping diamond gym motherfucking lifestyle. You want to floss. You want to be famous. You want all of the glamour. You want all of that bullshit. But at the same time, you want somebody else to motherfucking build the country. You know, I mean, Jay-Z made it fucking clear. He goes, when I step out, that inspires people. Looking at me be rich is basically an inspiration for everybody. You know, in the meantime, he's not doing anything but making money for his goddamn self. If he was serious, all of these goddamn black entertainers, if they were serious, they would have done what other motherfucking communities done, like, say, the Jewish community, and pull that motherfucking money together and actually, instead of handing out a fucking reparations check to each and every motherfucker so that you can blow that shit on some bullshit, to actually put that into fucking things that work for the fucking people. They work for everybody, not just a handful of motherfuckers. So no, I'm done, because, you know, this really, you know, I this is what, the third broadcast I'm saying this shit. I'm at a loss for motherfucking words. You know, y'all are at the fucking point now. Y'all are at the motherfucking point now where it's impossible. It's impossible to have a rational adult motherfucking conversation about any of this, because, you know, you're so caught up in the emotion, all of this shit. And basically, you know, nobody wants to admit this either. You're scared of white folks. You know, you all talk a big motherfucking game, but you're scared of white people. I mean, where's Black Lives Matter now? You know, when they fucking surrounded you and all that kind of shit. And I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying, you realize what the fuck your situation is, but you don't want to come right out and say it. You know what the fuck your situation is, but you do not want to fucking admit it. So, you know, you're just going to drown yourself in some emotional bullshit and think that a rap song is going to save you, or that some goddamn movie about a mythical Wakanda is going to save you if you believe hard enough. It's just going to all work out in the motherfucking end. You know, while you're still chanting Malcolm X without doing Malcolm X. Malcolm X said you got to do this shit for yourself. Part of that means educating yourself to actually have a vision of what the fuck the end looks like. You know, Marcus Garvey came the closest, but Marcus Garvey fucked up for the same reasons I'm talking about right now, because he wanted the flaws. He wanted it to be all about his fucking self. He would not take advice. Read his son's book. He would not take advice from anybody. His wife, his assistants, nobody. And he fucking, you know, just brought people along who were loyal to him that wouldn't question his authority. And the entire fucking organization fell the fuck apart, which does not mean that the system didn't come after him, because it certainly did. J. Edgar Hoover built his entire motherfucking reputation on taking down Marcus Garvey. Look it the fuck up. Just don't screen Cointo Pro. Look it the fuck up. Understand the actual fucking history. Understand the history and understand how this past week between Candace Owens and his funeral, Black America just went down the motherfucking toilet and is too egotistical to say to itself, we just completely motherfucking lost, you know, control of us, of our fucking shit, and we don't know what the fuck to do about it. This is the Angry Indian, and you are still listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. This is Fourth World Radio. Please stay tuned.
This is Rebecca Pierce. I'm a journalist and filmmaker from the San Francisco Bay Area. You can find me at weirdsister.tv, and this is Aboriginal Radio.
So let's move on and talk about something else, about Steve Harvey. And I'm going to get Mark, and then I'll get the others in. So, Mark, Steve Harvey went to Trump Tower and is taking a lot of backlash for meeting with the president-elect. What do you make of this controversy?
You know, I love Steve Harvey and I have respect for Steve Harvey, and I think his intentions were accurate or appropriate, rather. But my disagreement is the way in which he's being used by folk like Donald Trump. Again, his intention is just to have a seat at the table. But when you're at the table, you should have experts at the table. You should have people who can challenge the president at the table. I don't care if Steve's there, but if I'm Steve Harvey, I'm bringing Michelle Alexander. I'm bringing Cornel West. I'm bringing Imani Perry. I'm bringing Eddie Glaude. I'm bringing Michael Eric Dyson. I'm bringing some folk with me who can challenge the president and inform the conversation. Otherwise, you're just being
Bruce,
trumpeted
up there. Bruce, why are you saying, oh, my God?
Because they keep bringing up comedians and actors and athletes to represent black interests is demeaning, it's disrespectful, and it's condescending. Bring some people up there with some expertise, Donald Trump. Don't just bring up people to entertain.
So Bruce, you were at the meeting. You heard and saw everything.
I don't understand how anything I said would prompt that question.
Listen.
Steve Harvey turned into a policy analyst in the behind-the-scenes meeting, then it doesn't matter what I was there. I'm saying my concern is with the people he's trumpeting up and putting in front of the cameras.
Mark, you weren't even there. You didn't even know what happened, okay?
Yes, I do. Are you disagreeing that he brought
you
down? Are you disagreeing?
You weren't in the room, sir.
How does that negate my point that he brought Steve Harvey and then put him in front of the cameras?
That's my critique. Here's the deal. You don't know what happened. First of all, Pastor Daryl Scott, Michael Cohen, they are in a process of bringing all types of people from all over the country, from all different backgrounds, like we have. Remember the Diversity Coalition, where we reach out to all different types of people?
It was a bunch of mediocre Negroes being dragged in front of TV as a photo op for Donald Trump's exploitative campaign against black people. And you,
Mark,
are a prime example.
Okay,
how are you going to...
So now you want a name call, Mark.
Simone, you better jump in.
Yes,
Let me back Mark up here.
Simone has not spoken.
Let me back Mark up here, because Mark's making an important point.
Mark is just talking.
Black people are diverse, okay? And for Donald Trump to only engage actors and comedians and, you know, reality-type folks, he is not engaging with the diversity of black people in America. So, again, I would like to see Donald Trump bring some policy analysts, some real people who have some meat on the bones for the issues, to the table.
Danged if you do.
You got 10 seconds, Bruce.
So
he ain't far left liberal. He ain't done. What do you mean, danged if you do, danged if you don't? He ain't done. That is the point.
You can actually bring qualified
Bruce
people.
Bruce is an expert, and he brought Bruce in.
No, it's not.
All right.
Well, he can bring in conservative
Bruce?
Icons. They don't have to be leftists.
What's your expertise?
All right, so
Bruce?
That's it. I wish we had like a dong or an X. We surveyed 15 people and whatever. That's it for us tonight.
I'm going to let her own words do the talking. So I'm going to play for you the first 30 seconds of a statement she made about Adolf Hitler.
I agree. I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. I think that it gets, the definition gets poisoned by elitists that actually want globalism. Globalism is what I don't want. So when you think about whenever we say nationalism, the first thing people think about, in at least in America, is Hitler. You know, he was a national socialist. But if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. Problem is that he had dreams outside of Germany. He wanted to globalize. He wanted everybody to be German, everybody to be speaking German.
Would you like time to respond to that?
Yes, I think it's pretty apparent that Mr. Liu believes that black people are stupid and will not pursue the full clip in its entirety. He purposely presented an extracted clip.
Witness will suspend for a moment.
I launched a movement called Blexit, which is the black exit from the Democrat Party. When I became educated about the issues and stopped reacting emotionally, which is what the left wants us to do, presumably, when they hold up pictures of burning churches, I began to examine the facts and look at some of the narratives they were spinning. For example, in 2016, it was police brutality, and I realized that they are dissuading us against our own best interests. And I wanted to have a more productive dialogue with the black community about the issues that are actually affecting us and impacting us. When I announced that I was a conservative, I've never seen anything more racist, more disgusting, more vitriolic, more hate that's come my way in my entire life than the things that Democrats and the media say about me today. I've been referred to as an Uncle Tom, a bed wench. For those of you that don't know, that means a slave that sleeps with the master, a house nigger. And these are all words that have been said over and over again about black conservatives. We have the audacity to think for themselves and become educated about our history and the myth of things like the Southern switch and the Southern strategy, which never happened.
That 1954 by saying nigger, nigger, nigger. By 1968, you can't say nigger. That hurts your backfire. So you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you're getting so abstract now. You're talking about cutting taxes, and all of these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and the byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. We want to cut taxes, we want to cut this, and we want is much more abstract than even the busing thing, and a hell of a lot more abstract than never knew.
Things I'm going to share with you are difficult to hear, but they are facts. In August 1619, 400 years ago, 20 enslaved Africans landed at Jamestown. In order to sell, rape, and beat these Africans, white Americans, and I know none of you own slaves, had to see us as less than human. Thomas Jefferson said the following about me and my ancestors. They have no tenderness in love. They are intellectually inferior. They are physically unattractive. Thus began a narrative, says law professor Shauna Marshall, that black people were only good for physical labor, we were inhuman and violent. This was a narrative necessary in order to justify slavery. White supremacy has been a feature of the mistreatment of Native Americans for years, and it was applied to Africans once we arrived here. From the beginning of our country's inception through the Constitution, the founding fathers knowingly and consciously embraced slavery and white supremacy. Politics, including the three branches of government, have played and continue to play a role in the perpetuation of white supremacy and the continued mistreatment of black people, either through action or inaction. In 1857, the Supreme Court in the Dred Scott decision reinforced white supremacy by saying black people have no rights, that white people need respect. Ultimately, slavery ended. The Reconstruction era happened. Black men could vote. And then politics reared its ugly head once again. Federal troops were withdrawn from the South in order to place Rutherford B. Hayes on the in the presidency, and the reign of terror in the South began. Once again, I'm a Southerner. The Ku Klux Klan came about. They were white supremacists. They lynched people. They made sure that black people could not vote. For years, the NAACP asked Congress to act on anti-lynching laws. Congress refused to act. Fast forward to 1964, our fellow Texan got the Civil Rights Act passed, but when it passed, he said, we have lost the South. for a generation, he said, of Democrats. 6 years later, the Southern strategy was devised to encourage white people to abandon the Democratic Party and vote for the GOP. It was a shrewd and effective political strategy, but it drove yet another wedge between black and white people. Fast forward to 2008. America elects a black president. Unfortunately, this proves very unsettling to many people who have felt superior to black people when there's a black president and a black family in the White House. In 2015, Donald Trump began his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists. He called for a Muslim ban. When white supremacists marched in Charlottesville chanting, "Jews will not replace us," and "blood and soil," which is straight from the Nazi playbook, Mr. Trump said there are good people on both sides. He recently called asylum seekers animals. Dylann Roof goes into a place of worship and murders black souls. Jews are slaughtered in Pittsburgh. Muslims are slaughtered in New Zealand. We need the Congress to stand up and act. Ranking Member Collins, I was so delighted to hear your strong statement against white supremacy and that the Republicans took a lead in denouncing it. But we need you to do more. Out there where I live in California, we're not so sure where the Congress stands on white supremacy. So we're delighted that you're speaking up. I'd also like to address Chief Justice Roberts, who dismantled the Voting Rights Act in Shelby versus Holder. He said racism had been eradicated. That simply is not true. I hope he will talk to Justice Judge Bernice Donnell from the Sixth Circuit, who writes extensively on racism. We hope that a majority of you will want to give the country a signal that we are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We need the government to step up and do more. We also need the FBI to do a better job incentivizing local law enforcement agencies to turn over the data so we can capture the hot spots where hate crimes are happening around the country. And then finally, we need to see this Justice Department using its bully pulpit more often to condemn hate when it happens. As a civil rights organization, we're deeply disturbed by the Justice Department and this Attorney General and prior AGs prior to him. We're disturbed by their deafening silence in the fake of hate incidents that we've seen across the country. We're going to continue to bring pressure to bear to ensure that they do more and encourage Congress to use its oversight authority here as well. The final thing that I will note is that we're deeply concerned about the FBI's black identity extremist designation. This is mere distraction from the very real threat of white supremacy that we face today.
Democratic Congressman of California, ask her why she was there. Let's look.
In congressional hearings, the minority party gets to select its own witnesses. And of all the people that Republicans could have selected, they picked Candace Owens. I don't know Miss Owens. I'm not going to characterize her. I'm going to let her own words do the talking. So I'm going to play for you the first 30 seconds of a statement she made about Adolf Hitler.
I agree. I actually don't have any problems at all with the word nationalism. I think that it gets, the definition gets poisoned by elitists that actually want globalism. Globalism is what I don't want. So when you think about whenever we say nationalism, the first thing people think about, in at least in America, is Hitler. You know, he was a national socialist. But if Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. Problem is that he had dreams outside of Germany. He wanted to globalize. He wanted everybody to be German, everybody to be speaking German.
All right, so my first question is to Ms. Hershenhoff. Ms. Owens said, quote, "If Hitler just wanted to make Germany great and have things run well, okay, fine. The problem is that he had dreams outside of Germany." So when people try to legitimize Adolf Hitler, does that feed into white nationalist ideology?
It does, Mr. Liu. I know that Ms. Owens distanced herself from those comments later, but we expressed great concern over the original comments.
Great.
We'll defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around. There's nothing to it.
So you want to end all government health care? I think Donald should take a stay away from anything have to do with health care. We don't believe in socialized medicine. But I myself, a veteran that realized American dream because my hard work and three jobs, I like to take care of my own doctor and get the best doctor money can buy to take care of my wounds.
Okay.
It's called capitalism, sir. Socialized medicine does not work. I am originally from Nicaragua. I run away from communism. I realized that communism does not work. Socialism does not work. And the death of America will be socialized medicine. That is so clear because I came to this country looking for the freedom to choose my own doctor, not for the government to tell me when to live and when to die. I live for America, I work for America, and I love this country, and I can't stand socialism, I can't stand communism. The only good communist is a dead communist. You want to say anything more? Thank you, sir. The only good communist is a dead communist. Yeah! The only good communist is a dead communist. You got it?
So I take it you do want to close the VA then.
Sir, if a veteran cannot work, if a veteran's unable to function because of the inability of a war wound, let's go to charity hospital. We welcome them in New Orleans. We have charity hospital for those that can't work. But I myself, a veteran, a United States Marine Corps veteran that fought for this country, believe in freedom, freedom, and death to the damn commies. You got it? I say death to the commies. You get it? Death to the commies. Are you a commie? Are you a commie?
No.
Then stay alive, else you'll be dead. Now get out of here.
You really...
Get out of here, damn commie. Get out of here before I drop you off with this flag and throw you into the river.
What's wrong?
It's a damn communist.
He wants to close the VA.
Not never. I'm a veteran. United States Marine Corps.
You want to close the
veteran? United States Marine Corps. I fought for this country, you son of a bitch. What did you do? You parasite socialist. That's what you are, a parasite socialist. A lousy cockroach. A communist cockroach.
Hey, this is Vagabond, producer, writer, and director, Machetero. You're listening to The Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
When you've got nothing and you want everything, you've got to get to be the Mac.
I mean, being rich and black means something, man. Don't you know that?
The Mac. His business is pleasure. He sells the soft stuff.
They're going to have to rewrite the Mac and Game book, baby, you know, because I'm going to be the new king.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the big moment we've all been waiting for. The Mac of the year, Goldie! 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 Brother's going to work it out.
Brother's
going to
work it out.
Brother's going to work it out.
Max Julian is Goldie, and Goldie is the Mac. The Mac, with Richard Pryor and music by Willie Hutch. The Mac. From Cinerama Releasing, rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parents. Now that you've seen all the rest, make way for the Mac. The biggest and the best.
Coming to you live from Northeast Jefferson County, Kansas. Your one true voice in Kansas. This is the Radio Free Kansas.
I'm your host, Mike Cadell, broadcasting from North Jefferson County, Kansas, smack dab between Kansas City, Topeka, Lawrence, Atchison. Easiest way to describe it. Put together quite a good show. Think you're going to like it.
Radio Free Kansas on blogtalkradio.com/fightingcockfire.
Anarchism is not bombs, disorder, or chaos. It is not robbery and murder. It is not a war of each against all.
Tune in to Subversion 1312, the 4ZZZ Anarchy Show.
Tuesday from 9 till 10 p.m. on 102.1 FM. or streaming 4ZZZFM.org.au.
How about trying this future on for size?
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Nicely played. Sachin is off the mark.
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Hey everybody, it's Dr. Vibe, the host and producer of the Dr. Vibe Show at thedrvibeshow.com. At our show, we do conversations and provide information for black men and those who love them. So come check us out. Also at iTunes, and also selective episodes are featured at the Good Men Project, one of the most viewed websites in the world for men. So find out about black men and those who love them at the Dr. Vibe Show.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fusebox Radio Broadcast and BlackRadioIsBack.com, and you're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right? Peace.
We know that the assassination of Malcolm changed the paradigm of debate in this country, as did the assassination of King. And I just want to... Seeing that all of the brothers and sisters up here have touched on the vital parts of the assassination, I want to say that, in my view, one of the most significant things about the assassination of Malcolm, and some of the speakers here touched on it, was that it changed the paradigm of public debate in the African community. No longer in the African community was there a leftist or nationalist or pro-black position that can be argued around those issues that affected our lives. The whole debate moved to the right. And I want to read something to you briefly by a gentleman by the name of... Mr. Giroux. And he wrote that what is missing in the current debates dominating politics today is the recognition that the real issues at stake are not the debt ceiling or the state of the economy, however important these things are, but a powerful and poisonous form of authoritarianism that poses a threat to the very idea of democracy and the institutions, public values, informative cultures, and public spheres that nourish it. In the United States, and, you know, I've pointed this out time and time again, in the United States, the debates around the issues that affect our lives are debates that have been formulated and manufactured by the establishment, by the powers that be. The parameters of the debates have been established by the establishment and the powers that be. So that when you debate an issue or talk about an issue outside of the parameters of the accepted wisdom, you are labeled insane, crazy, radical, dangerous, violent, But when you discuss reform of a system that requires abolishment, you know, we need a new abolitionist movement here in America. We don't need a reform movement. We need an abolitionist movement. And when we talk about reform, we are talking about recreating and reinventing the same mechanisms of oppression in new guises. You know, I call Obama the political antichrist. I have told many of my comrades and brothers and sisters that Barack Obama is the slickest thing that white supremacy could do since the Emancipation Proclamation. And the reason why I say this, and Jared pointed this out when he talked about the absolute dichotomy between what Malcolm stood for and what Obama is about and what he stands for. And I want to draw this out just for 1 second. I want to talk about assassination as a modification of dissent. Assassination as a strategy of modifying public debate, modifying the political paradigm. And when we look at the assassinations that were the most significant in the 60s, the assassination of Dr. King, the assassination of Malcolm X, even the assassination of Robert Kennedy, when we look at these assassinations, they all had what effect? Of changing the locus of the debate that was moving towards revolutionary consciousness, revolutionary understanding, an anti-war movement that was beginning to become anti-imperialist generally. Now, we need to understand something. Both Malcolm and Martin were assassinated when they attached the African diaspora situation here in America with the wars of the United States abroad, with U.S. foreign policy, with U.S. involvement and support of colonialism. One of Malcolm's major speeches was how Patrice Lumumba was assassinated. He talked about the plot to kill Patrice Lumumba. He talked about Vietnam. He talked about why the Bandung Conference was necessary. He talked about black nationalism. Malcolm said that he was an advocate of black nationalism, and he broke down what he meant by black nationalism. To Malcolm's view, black nationalism was black people controlling the lives, economy, and all of the different aspects of their community. Now, in order to be a black nationalist in that context, in a society in which you were supposedly citizens, means that there was a paradigm of political disempowerment, of dispossession, that accrued to black people that didn't apply to any other people in this country. And that politics and that historical reality was dispossession. African people in this country were brought here as slaves, and they have suffered a policy of dispossession. We have no inheritance of wealth to pass on because we have no wealth. We were never paid for the hundreds of years of labor, so we have no wealth. We have no property. All the property was taken after the Civil War during the Reconstruction. So what do we have? We have the ambivalence of being second-class citizens. And Malcolm asked you, what is a second-class citizen but a first-class slave? So we need to understand that Malcolm began to break down the paradigm of black oppression in this country as a form of domestic colonialism, as a unique form of domestic colonialism, that the black communities existed within a society that had as its founding ideology white supremacy. And that ideology of white supremacy had undergone changes over the years since Reconstruction, but it still remained fundamentally the same. And Malcolm said, what is the difference between a Dixiecrat and a Democrat? And what's the difference between a Republican and a Democrat? They both are dogs. One's a wolf and one's a fox. So Malcolm broke down that the condition of African people in this country required independent thinking, independent political organization, and understanding of colonialism and imperialism. This is what Malcolm talked about. Martin Luther King, on the other hand, who came from the institution of the black church, who was brought up in the mainstream of black bourgeois culture, black middle class institutions, whose father and grandfather were preachers right here, right in Atlanta. He had access to all of the institutions of the black elite. And he took a moral position on the human rights and the civil rights of African people in this country. And you got to remember, when Martin first started out, his own class and his own people were against him. He had to write a letter from a Birmingham jail to his fellow clergymen and said, if not now, when are we going to protest about this? After he got the Nobel Peace Prize, he said that the United States government, how can he talk about violence in the ghetto when his own government was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world? The minute that Martin Luther King started talking about the same things that Malcolm X talked about, they both were assassinated. Robert Kennedy, a white boy, gunned down when it became apparent that he would have won the presidency if he would have got the nomination. And why is that important? Why was his brother assassinated? Why was his brother assassinated? We have a little island 90 miles off the coast of Florida, Cuba. And Cuba has been under embargo ever since the Bay of Pigs and ever since the so-called Cuban crisis. Cuba has been under embargo since the late 1950s. Just remember that. An embargo is an act of war. Cuba has been surrounded and embargoed by the United States. And it was embargoed by the United States because the CIA made a miscalculation about Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution and could not swallow that miscalculation. That miscalculation led to the impasse that we have today in Cuba. And the CIA and the Dulles brothers and the architects of the Cold War hated John F. Kennedy for going up against them and not carrying out big policies. And they destroyed him. Now, there's plenty of conspiracy theories of whether the mafia killed him, whether the CIA killed him, whether the KGB killed him. It's all irrelevant. We're talking about assassination in America as a means of moving the public debate to the right. And in every case where the assassination took place, the public debate moved inexorably to the right. This is very important to understand because the consolidation of right-wing power in this country is manifested today. And it's manifested in the choice of Barack Obama for president by U.S. Finance Capital. Barack Obama was picked to be the president of this country when he was at Harvard Law School by the freedmen capitalist faction of the U.S. ruling elite. And for those of you who don't know the Chicago Freedmen School of Law, School of Economics, it's about finance capital being democracy. So today we live in a society that has the facade of a democracy, but has the marriage of the corporate elite and the state. And any marriage between corporations and the state is called fascism. So we're living in a society, a unique society, that's democratically fascist. This is a democratically fascist state. And that Obama has carried out, has brought into fruition laws and statutes that you and I would have never permitted if it was George Bush. The fact that he has brought these prohibitive and repressive laws into existence, expanded the U.S. torture program, expanded the U.S. black sites, carried out drone attacks, has moved the world into a whole new level of impersonal warfare. You know, when you don't come home in body bags, when Johnny doesn't come home in body bags, it's pretty easy to go to war. When you know your son is sitting up in the office somewhere playing video games and killing people 5,000 miles away, that's easy war. But the point is that the president of the United States today is perceived by people of African ancestry, the victims of the counterintelligence program, the targets of repression and right-wing consolidation in this country for the last 50 years. For over 50 years, this country has consolidated right-wing power under the military, the police, and corporate finance capital. And the first movement that emerged to protest this after the economic decline and breakdown in this country was the Occupied Wall Street movement. And what did they talk about? That capitalism was the enemy. That they were 1%, that the 1% controlled this society, and they were the 99%. Where was their mortgages going? Where were the jobs? Where was the infrastructure? Where was the health care? Where was the schools? What was this economy in this country about? We bailed out Wall Street. We bailed out the auto industry. We bailed everybody out. But when it came to ordinary poor people, there's no bail money out here. There's no bail. All during the political campaigns, they talked about the middle class. Nobody mentioned the word P-O-O-R, poor. That's you and me. Middle class. Who's the middle class in America? Who's the middle class under modern finance capitalism? So the assassination of Malcolm X was very important, because now whenever we debate police brutality, stop and frisk, racial profiling, no one talks about these contradictions of racism in the context of black nationalism. No one talks about it in the context of a radical analysis from the left. All of the analysis is from the middle to the right. There is no left in America no more. There is no progressive movements in America anymore. The unions have been demoralized, they have been disorganized, and they have been beaten down. And the rise of the corporations is clear, because a corporation has more rights, more civil rights, and more legal rights than you do. Corporations are considered an individual. They're considered a person, a corporation. Well, if they're considered a person, how come none of them ever go to jail whenever they commit crimes? Nobody's in jail out of the 2.5 million that came from corporations. There's over 20 million people in this country that have felony convictions and are out of jail with felony convictions. So what we're looking at when we look at the assassination of Malcolm and the assassination of Dr. King is we look at the modification of the politics of this country by murder. By murder. Malcolm X has been more effective dead than he was alive. When the brother just talked about it, when he last saw him, he got out of a taxi by himself. He was getting out of a cab, coming into by himself. In the last days, Malcolm was by himself. All these people today that quote him and that say they love Malcolm X, when he was alive, the man was by himself. And this is very important to understand, because in order for them to destroy Malcolm, they had to isolate him. In order for them to destroy Malcolm, they had to vilify him. And his means of vilification was to use the very organization that he had joined and that had opened up his eyes and moved him forward, the Nation of Islam. And when we look at the counterintelligence program, we have to understand that those organizations that were left standing after the 1960s are the same organizations that you have today that stood idly by while they created the prison industrial complex. You got to remember, 2.5 million people didn't go to jail in the last 20 years, and nobody was on the watch. Jesse was a national leader. Reverend Al was a national leader. Minister Farrakhan was a national leader. They created the prison industrial complex on their watch. Did they talk about prisons? Did they talk about the massive incarcerations of black youth? Did they talk about political prisoners? Did they talk about the political repression? Hell no. They were calling for more cops. Remember when they were talking about hip-hop being violent? They were calling for cops in the community. When crack academics hit the streets, who were the radicals that were talking about the police and the government was distributing drugs in the black community? The Black Panther Party talked about the government's involvement in drug distribution and heroin distribution ever since World War II. And it was put off as a radical rhetoric. And how many essays, how many journalistic stories have come down the line in the last 20 years to show that the U.S. government was involved in massively in drug distribution in the black community? We have the Les Payne's the heroin trail. We have the other one about crack cocaine and the Contras. All of these exposés show that the U.S. government was heavily involved in the drug trafficking. But when the left said these things, they were marginalized. But it was true. Whenever the left says things today, it's marginalized. I'm going to speak up at Skidmore College in a couple of days. And the students up there are fighting each other over me speaking. One group says that I'm going to shame the college. These are black students, by the way. That I have a background, you know, I come from the Black Panther Party and BLA, I'm violent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and he's not really the type of speaker for Black History Month. Another group said, but he's the perfect speaker for Black History Month. Read his paper on New Age imperialism and the dilemma of Pan-African consciousness, which is I'm delivering up in Skidmore. They don't want to hear it because I'm critical of U.S. policy and Obama. Okay? I'm critical of the fact that here we are in the 21st century. We are in the 21st century in a historical moment in American empire, and we are asleep at the wheel. Totally asleep at the wheel. Black folks think Obama's going to be president for the rest of his life. The laws that he passed that allows the president to assassinate American citizens domestically and foreign and in our foreign territory is going to go out with him? The Patriot Act and the addendums that come to it are going to go out with him? Guantanamo is going to go out with him? There's not one promise that he made about these things that he has kept. He talked about withdrawal from Iraq. They were coming out of Iraq before he went there because they got their ass ran out of Iraq. Everything that they tried to do in Iraq to monopolize the oil industry in Iraq failed. So my point is that assassinations of our leaders at this particular junction in time, in 64, in 67, these assassinations came at a time when the consciousness of people were rising to the point where this consciousness was becoming revolutionary. This consciousness was becoming, in many cases in the black community, nationalist. Black folks was burning down entire cities and leaving black stores untouched. That's nationalist. Black people were talking about black power and wearing afros and giving all kinds of signs, and the military was concerned about black soldiers sending weapons home to the Black Panther Party. The United States government was frantic, and they had a war in Vietnam that they couldn't win. And on top of that, students in Europe were going on strike in solidarity with workers. The whole of the Western civilization was in an uproar in the 1960s and early 70s. And the way they dealt with that upsurge of popular resistance was through assassination. Through imprisonment of political prisoners, through assassination of our most vocal leaders. We must understand that Malcolm X was one of the most articulate spokespersons of black nationalism in his day. He could win an argument based on black nationalist ideology. Now, you know that that's unprecedented because you don't have one black nationalist that comes on Al Sharpton's show on MSNBC. There are no experts in Pan-Africanism invited anywhere. What is an expert on Pan-Africanism? What is Pan-Africanism? Ask the average black person, the average person out there in the streets, do you know what Pan-Africanism is? They're clueless. But ask them if you know what the Democratic Party is, what the Republican Party is. Even some of them even know what the Communist Party is, or what the Progressive Party is, or the Green Party. What I'm trying to say is, we are completely absent from the debate because of assassination. So how do we change this paradigm? How do we deal with this? Huey P. Newton said that information is intelligence. The power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in the desired fashion. Once we define the fact that we are in this position primarily because a certain class of black leaders, the Samuel L. Jackson types in Chango, a certain type of black leader has permitted us and led us down this path. They have led us down this path. We have voted for Obama overwhelmingly, and what have we been told? That if we don't vote for Obama, we have Mitt Romney. He's supposed to scare you. How is a white boy who's a slave master of the plantation going to scare the slave on the plantation? He's already on the plantation. Slave master's running it. What is there to be scared of now? Everybody says, well, if you don't vote for Obama, you got Romney. And Obama has carried out every policy that Romney and Bush would have carried out in spades. If white folks, if the average white person wasn't so stupid, he would understand that the best thing that happened to him is Barack Obama. They just don't understand. And the irony of it is, they're getting all of this fascism, all of these repressive laws, all of this militarized police state from a black guy. They're getting it from a black guy. A black guy is going to take their guns from them. This is what they're saying. A Muslim, an undercover Muslim, somebody that wasn't really born here. You know, the birthers, you know, he wasn't born here. He's, you know, I don't think he was born here neither, but that's not the point. The fact of the matter is that the average white guy in the trailer park and on the working stiff believes that Obama is somehow opposed to them. And the average black person believes that Obama is just being presidential. That he really has our interests at heart, he just can't show it. He just can't say nothing about it. He just can't speak on it. But the fact of the matter is that white males still control America. They don't have nothing to worry about. They got a president. And you know they're grooming the next one. And the next one we're going to be told 4 years from now that we should vote for this Hispanic who came from a family of immigrants who spoke at the last Democratic convention. We're going to be told that he's the new face of America and that we got to get behind him in the Democratic Party. And the Republicans are going to have a Rubio up there talking about, yeah, you got to get behind it. And that's who we're going to vote for. We're going to get into some coalition politics in a few years. Big time. Big time. And Obama, he's going to be the elder statesman of black American politics to the day he dies. Everybody's going to be beating a path to his door for endorsements for this and for that. And I want to close with this. He touched on how in the 60s, they bought off, they had this war on poverty. And we have what we call poverty pimps. You know, there was a whole class that evolved, the poverty pimps. These were storefront militants, you know, with the dashiki and the bullet around their neck and the big old afro, you know, and they was on the payroll. You know, they were, you know, this was the war on poverty. This was before the war on crime and before the war on drugs and before the war on, you know, this was one of the first wars. And, when they had this war on poverty, Lyndon Baines Johnson flooded the community. He said, well, they're burning down their community because they don't have no investment in America. So let's give them a piece of America. And they had all these urban renewal programs come in and anti-poverty programs. Obama has just established a similar type of program where corporations that funded his campaign can begin to fund activists in the community. It's called the Activist Empowerment Program. So the funding that put him in power now is going to pay off all of these guys that supported Obama for the last 4 years. So the Michael Baysdens and all of these idiots that you've been listening to all the time, all of a sudden they're going to have funding for their programs and their projects, and you won't have Jack Doo-Doo. So will it go around in circles? Yes. Obama's doing the same thing that Lyndon Baines Johnson did, and we're sitting here talking about, well, you know, Obama got swagger. And I'd be telling sisters, I said, well, look, you know, if sisters don't criticize Obama, it's not going to work. Because the average sister thinks that Obama is a catch. Because he's light-skinned, because he has an education, because he's a lawyer, And he has Michelle and the kids at the house. I mean, how could you not love this? Huh? You ain't check out Michelle's politics and who she's relating to. But she's a black queen. She's all of these things. Because what? She's married to Obama and none of us voted for her. Nobody voted for Michelle Obama. They voted for her husband. Okay? But having said that, this is why this man has this devastating support. Sisters will defend him like they was defending their own children. Why? He's a catch. He's successful. And he's successful by the standards of who? Who is he successful by? What standards is he based on? How many black folks go to Harvard Law School? And is president of the Harvard Law Review. Huh? How many of them are picked by white Jewish professors to continue their education and continue their indoctrination and are put in position to undergo a period of grassroots acclimation? How many? When they trotted him out at the Democratic Convention and he gave that speech, the first thing they said, that's the future of the Democratic Party. I remember all of those pundits. Every last one, CNN, Fox, even Fox News, this is the face of the new Democratic Party. This was when he gave his keynote address at the Democratic Convention, before anybody even knew about Obama. Ain't nobody knew about this Negro before then. Everybody talking about Run Jesse Run. Everybody talking about Run Jesse Run. But we see what happened with that, and we see what happened with his son. We see what happened with the Barbie Rushes. We see what happened with all these poop butt Negroes sitting up in the black caucus right now who have nothing to say about U.S. foreign policy in Africa, who have nothing to say about mass incarceration in our community, who have nothing to say about police brutality and police murder in our community, who have nothing to say about the key issues in our community that are affecting us every day. So I just want to end by saying this. When we look at the assassination of our leaders, we have to understand that these assassinations were meant to push us in a certain direction of thought and social practice and disunity. And it worked. It worked. Today, we have black leaders who can't lead us nowhere. We have more black elected officials than we ever had in our history, and we have less power. We got more mayors than you can shake a stick at, and more police brutality in the communities that they come from. Almost half of the mayors, when they get out of office, are indicted for corruption. Nagel was sitting up in New Orleans talking about they didn't give him the funding to hook up the dikes, and he told them about it, and he warned them about it. Where's Nagel going? His ass is going to jail now as we speak. Jesse Jackson Jr., elected, back in office, and he ain't even in the street. He's in an insane asylum. He's in therapy. That's like electing a dead man to office. Black folks just voted for him. That's Jesse's son. Them sisters from the church, they just trooped on into the voting and just voted for him. Now, if I was standing out there, say, man, don't vote for this clown. He's an opportunist. Man, wearing Rolexes and chasing women around and wasting your money. Oh, he represents us. He's always been good to us. Every Thanksgiving, we get a turkey. So now we're on the eve of destruction of empire, ass out on the eve of destruction. So what are we going to do about it? So I think that out of these types of forums, we have to begin to build a public opinion that assassinations of our leaders were not coincidence. They were not just incidents in history. They were calculated attempts to change our attitudes and our ability to organize ourselves around our own interests. And that was the importance of Malcolm. Malcolm clarified things to us in plain language so that we could organize around our own interests. Martin Luther King stood as a moral beacon to a country that had no morality so that we could organize around a new ethic, a new understanding of humanity. And they both were assassinated. And where did the U.S. go? It has went from the Nobel Prize to Martin Luther King, a man of peace and nonviolence, to a Nobel Prize for a warmonger in the White House. So, assassination is work. The question now is, now that we are all targets, what are we going to do about it? Because now, they're not just talking about assassinating our leaders. They have laws in place to assassinate anybody that disagrees with U.S. policy, that they deem as an enemy of the state. So today, every citizen is a potential terrorist. They're not a potential human being who could contribute to society. Each one of us here is a potential terrorist, and our government could come after you today, snatch you outside that door and drag you away, and nobody will see you again, and there's nothing that you can do about it. Thanks to a black president. So when Jared says that this is an oxymoron, that you can't mix Obama and Malcolm, tell that to these brothers and sisters who have these t-shirts and sweatshirts on, and they have Elijah Muhammad over here, they have Malcolm X over here. Now, Elijah and Malcolm on the same t-shirt, you know, his chest should be ripped apart. You got Elijah over here, Malcolm over here, Martin down here, Bayard Rustin back here. And you're saying, what kind of shirt is this? If we had that much unity on that he got on that shirt, we'd be free by now. That just goes to show you that Koreans is making our shirts for us. And we buying it because, you know, if it's a name, I got to wear it. Malcolm X is not just our shining prince. Malcolm X represents a turning point in our consciousness. And a turning point in our consciousness that was sidetracked by reactionaries, that was sidetracked by the U.S. government and counterintelligence, and that led to the present consolidation of right-wing power in this country. And that consolidation of right-wing power has placed us outside the parameters of debate against the police state. We no longer talk about self-defense. When's the last time you heard a black man talk about self-defense? Nobody talks about it. Everything's in the context of gun violence. Gun violence in a society that was founded on the gun. Rap Brown, Imam Jamil Al-Amin said that violence is as American as cherry pie. This is a militarized police state. Look at a football game. Look at a baseball game. Military flyover, dedication to our heroes. You got crippled soldiers standing in the middle. What they got to do with a football game? What does a crippled soldier with crutches got to do with a linebacker playing football? Nothing. It's just building up this patriotism and love of the military and love of the police. Well, you know, Christopher Dorner kind of like changed a little bit of that. But my point is we're living in a military society that's violent, that institutionalizes and glorifies violence. And until we come to grips with that reality, gun control only means that you and I need to get a gun. You and I need to know how to use it. We need to organize in our community, and we need to organize legal gun clubs in our community so that we can protect our community in times of crisis. And I just want to end with this. The reason why Stop and Frisk works the way it does, the reason why it's so effective, is because it prohibits our youth from ever owning a weapon. It's not just the job they're keeping them from when they get arrested and they go through court. They cannot own a weapon. And the fear in America, the greatest fear in America, and one of the reasons Malcolm was struck down, the greatest fear in America are black men with guns. Black men who are willing to defend themselves and to defend their rights and the integrity of their community. And that whole debate was killed with Malcolm X and the repression of the Black Panther Party. As Nkechi pointed out, the major focus of the COINTELPRO program was to dissuade black youth from revolutionary consciousness. That they would rather be a Lil Wayne, a P. Diddy, a basketball player, LeBron James. I ain't got nothing against LeBron James. I do got something against Lil Wayne. But I ain't got nothing against LeBron James. He's a basketball player. But since when has black folks' leaders been sports figures and rap artists? We the only people that got black leaders that are sports figures and rap artists and reverends. Everybody else got black leaders that are, got leaders just politicians. So we need to understand that Malcolm's assassination was calculated, and it came at a crucial time, as all of these brothers and sisters were pointing out, when black people were moving towards decolonization. They were moving towards internationalism. We were creating the type of consensus in the African diaspora that could have led to United States of Africa today. And that whole process was sidetracked. Lumumba was assassinated. Malcolm was assassinated. Nkrumah was overthrown and deposed. Sekou Touré was deposed. Jomo Kenyatta died. Eduardo Mondlane assassinated. Amilcar Cabral assassinated. All these assassinations that occurred by the imperialists and by the Americans were designed to sidetrack and move people's movements to the right and away from national liberation and freedom. And we need to understand that that's what Malcolm was about. That's what the murder of Malcolm was about. His murder was designed to keep you enslaved and unable to think in any other alternative but within the system and within the conventional wisdom. So I just wanted to, I know I took too long, so I guess we're going to have questions. Cynthia, we got to have the sister. We're going to have a question and answer? What about you?
Cynthia's
got to
speak.
You got to speak. Whoa, hey. Well, actually, I'm going to take your job and introduce.
HIV Sankramit Harulai Maya Mamatara. समाजमा सम्मानित जीवन जिउने वातावरण निर्माण गरौं।
यो उनीहरूको अपेक्षा होइन, अधिकार हो।
रोगलाई तिरस्कार र बहिष्कार गरौं, रोगीलाई होइन। एचआईभी अरूलाई मात्र होइन, तपाईलाई पनि लाग्न सक्छ।
सकारात्मक सोच, स्वस्थ समाज अनि सही निर्णय नै सरल तथा सफल जीवन हो।
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास।
हेलो, आई एम सुजन अग्लुका। The North has the highest incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs, in the country. We also have a high rate of teenage pregnancies. High-risk behaviors, unprotected sex, lead to the spread of HIV/AIDS. It can be prevented. Learn the ways to protect yourself and others. Knowledge is power.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
That America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news act.
children, my children, why do we build the wall? Free. My children, my children, how does the wall keep us free?
How does the wall keep us free? The wall keeps out the enemy, and we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall, we build the wall to keep us free.
Who do we call the enemy? My children, my children, who do we call the enemy?
Who do we call the enemy? The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy, and we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall, we build the wall to keep us free.
Because we have and they have not. My children, because they want what we have got.
Because we have and they have not, because they want what we have got. The enemy is poverty, and the wall keeps out the enemy, and we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall.
That she was being held with a British journalist in Mosul in 2016. So, you know, there are other sightings with other people.
Did ISIS actually make her work as a nurse for them?
Well, we think she was working at a clinic. She was treating local people. That clearly made her more valuable as a prison, right? She was a well-trained nurse by Western standards, and also a midwife. You know, there was conflicting information about whether she was treating fighters or others, but we're fairly confident she was treating locals at local health clinics.
It's been a long and depressing story, that of people from the West taken hostage by the IS group. Many have been released because their governments have paid ransoms. Many have been executed, haven't they? They've been killed.
That's true, and, you know, the Red Cross's policy is they don't pay ransoms, right? They literally cannot do that if they want to work in all these war zones, you know, helping people and being, you know, neutral participants. If they were to have paid a ransom for Louisa, I can't imagine how they could work in other war zones where their people would be ripe for abduction.
One thing's for sure, if she is alive, she's been in some of the most dangerous places on Earth, and she must have had many close shaves in terms of bombing raids and violence that has raged around ISIS.
Yeah, she could. I mean, think about, you know, she's been there since October 13. She'd have an extraordinary view into the caliphate, right, from a Westerner.
That was Adam Goldman, reporter for the New York Times, on Louisa Akari, a nurse from New Zealand, abducted by the group Islamic State in 2013. You're with the